We've taken our Those Were the Days microphones to the Ambassador East Hotel, where we're talking with Tony Randall, who's in town to talk about his new television series, The Odd Couple, which will make its debut on ABC TV Thursday, September 24th at 8:30 p.m. Chicago time. Tony, welcome.
Thank
to
you.
To Chicago, to Those Were the Days.
Hello, Evanston.
Hello, Evanston, and the whole North Shore.
I know it well. I went to Northwestern University.
Right, right. Yeah. Jack Klugman is your co-star in the TV series.
Yes. Sidekick, I believe, is the word they use.
He's not a faithful companion.
Retainer.
You're retaining the flavor of the Broadway play and the movie.
I didn't see the movie. So I don't know. I didn't see the movie because I heard they didn't have the flavor that I was so very fond of. Yes, the flavor of the play, definitely. The characters, certainly. Jack played Oscar for over a year in London, and I played Felix many times. I played it twice here in Chicago.
Right.
Drury Lane.
Drury Lane, right.
Yes. With Evanston's own Tony Marcus.
Right.
Living within the shadow of Dyke Stadium, as you may or may not know.
When we are often in the shadow of Dyke Stadium. As a matter of fact, this program usually is a Saturday afternoon show, and we are being preempted for 10 weeks for Northwestern football.
Mm-hmm.
And we're moving to Sunday, and you are our first Sunday guest.
Is that right?
Isn't that a thrill?
Well, it is nice. Very nice indeed, yes.
How many Odd Couple programs do you have in the can? So
12 now.
12 now. And, of course, you'll have 39 before you're all
26.
26. And then the reruns halfway through it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's great. I've heard a lot of things about you and the Odd Couple. And you have always played this sort of a fastidious type character, haven't you?
I don't think so. No. I've played a goodly variety of roles. I've never played a real slob, I suppose, like Oscar.
Well, you couldn't play that part.
I don't think
I could. Do you think the public would be ready for you in that part?
It's that I'm not ready for it.
Oh, I see. What do you have to do to get ready for that role?
I suppose be reborn, as Shaw said of Herbert Beerbohm Tree as Falstaff.
Is The Odd Couple the first TV series you've done since the Mr. Peepers?
Mm-hmm. Thing? That's right.
Yeah, that was that was a great television series. I suppose. Do you like it when people remember the old TV series?
They don't remember it so well. I played West on that, and for 2 or 3 years after it went off the air, people would say, "Hi, West," on the street, you know. But then it perished. It faded, and I never hear it anymore.
Oh, you used to. Of course, it was live most of the time, wasn't it?
All
the
time,
time
yes.
Live. From 52 to 55. You
right,
that.
Right.
Did you? I'll never forget the locker bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to bang, bang, boom, boom, and then the locker would snap open.
He'd bang on a locker 3 lockers down from his,
right,
and then his locker would open.
Right.
That's right.
And you were always the know-it-all. Harvey Westcott was the know-it-all school teacher.
Yes. Well, there's an example of a fellow who is not fastidious or Felix-like.
Right. Yeah.
Remember when once he came over to my house and I was wearing torn underwear?
As Harvey
Westcott. But I pointed out that my shirt cost $15.
Did you ever do One Man's Family on TV?
Yes. Not on radio, but I was on the TV series. That was my first series. I was on that for about a year, year and a half. That was live, too, in the early days. I don't know, 49, 50.
Did they have... was that written by Carlton E. Morse, too? Do you remember?
He wrote some of it. They had gone back to episode 1 in the radio series, mm-hmm. all of which he had written. And he farmed out some of the writing to the fellow who played Clifford, who was James Lee, Jim Lee, the well-known... He was an actor on it, as I say, Clifford, but he wanted to be a writer, and he's become a very well-known writer. He's now a Hollywood writer-producer. His most famous play was Career, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Big
Hit. Mm-hmm. Well, now we've moved from The Odd Couple to Mr. Peepers to One Man's Family.
Yes, we're retrogressing.
We're going to bridge the sound gap and go back to the golden age of radio, if you don't mind. And everyone who knows about radio and who's a radio fan will remember you as a Reggie York on I Love a Mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And you were in the reincarnation of that series.
I was the second time around, yes.
Right.
They put the entire series on from the first to last episode twice.
Right, right. Mm. They did the original series was on from 39 to 44, and then you came in 49, right? The end of the 40s.
I guess that's about right. I guess so. I really don't remember the dates, but this was the Carlton E. Morris epic also.
Right.
And he used the Paul of the original radio series was the Jack in the original Isle of Mystery. Paul of One Man's Family was Jack.
Right, right.
And the same thing when he did it on television. The Paul on television was the Jack on this revival of the radio series Isle of Mystery. That was Russ Thorson.
Right. Now, you did a... How did you get the role of Reggie on this?
I think I auditioned for it. I don't remember any more about it than that it was.
I have to apologize. I come armed with information about these things, and I don't expect you to remember that, all of these things.
All right,
didn't
you
audition for the role of Doc?
I may have. That didn't matter. You come in and audition for every role. That happened frequently in auditions, and you'd... the director would probably have some idea in mind already of what he wanted. That's always true of auditions. Actors should never feel badly when they don't get a role. Don't feel they've auditioned badly. The director already knows what he wants, and he keeps auditioning people until someone comes in who coincides with his... Oh, I think prejudice is the best word.
Oh, he has a preconceived notion of
what
he's like, and he hopes someone of the actors auditioning will fit into the role. What else did you do on radio?
Oh, my. I made my living in radio as an actor on the soaps and on the nighttime shows. The nighttime shows paid well, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Soaps paid about $33, $34 for a 15-minute episode. Mm-hmm. If you did enough of them, you'd be making a good living. And some people did 40, 50 a week. But the nighttime shows paid about $110, $115, $130. The big half hour, and an hour shows paid considerably more.
Did you do most of this from New York?
All of it. I was never one of the Chicago radio actors.
Uh-huh. And you hadn't done much radio in California?
I'd never been really to California except on visits. I was a New York actor strictly. Although I had been a radio announcer for a year in Worcester, Massachusetts, from 41 to 42, I think it was.
You were that early in the radio game. You must have been very, very young at the time you were doing radio.
Yeah. I was too young to be drafted. I remember that because the war was on then, and you weren't drafted till you were 21.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's right. Well, now what exactly? Which programs were you on when you did the soaps? What soap operas did you do?
Goodness gracious, I did When a Girl Marries. Portia Faces Life. Perry Mason, that was a very popular soap. Mm. All of them. Lorenzo Jones, I was on. The small parts come in and out, sometimes run a week or two, sometimes longer. I was never on Greatest Story. I was on Light of the World.
Oh, yes.
Remember that one? One I was on year in, year out. I was on it two or three times, once or twice or a week for years, was My True Story.
Oh, the adaptation from the magazine, right?
Yeah, and that was a full, complete soap opera, half hour long, every day. Different story every day. That
was really a tearjerker, too, wasn't it?
Yes, every day a tearjerker. And unbelievable writing. And... that took place in Studio 6B, I remember very well, on NBC, which is now where Johnny Carson broadcasts from.
And where you visit frequently, too, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. Then I remember I was on a number of things written by a woman named Erna Phillips.
Right. She was based in Chicago.
Yes.
She wrote a lot of soap operas.
Yes, and everyone took her very seriously. If you were in an Erna Phillips script, that was supposed to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you changed a word of it, Miss Phillips was listening and didn't like that. And it was this utter pap, just like everything else. It was really, really beneath contempt.
Well, I've heard now that you've said that you really didn't think much of the writing on radio.
Didn't make much of radio, no. All the old radio fans who hear me talk about it occasionally, I'm frequently asked about it, and I have a good memory and remember it all, and it goes under the heading of trivia, think that I'm a fan of it, and I despised it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I used to pray that I'd get out of it.
And you did.
And I did, yes.
Well, now, you mentioned also about the nighttime programs that you did. Now, mm-hmm. which nighttime shows were you? You see, I've checked a lot of reference books on radio, and I can only attach you to I Love a Mystery.
Well, that was a contract job, and I was on it for years.
Uh-huh.
But the other things you just came in and did once. You're just an mm-hmm. actor. I was on Mr. District Attorney many, many, many times. But if you'd look up Mr. District Attorney, you'd only find you'd find Len Doyle as Harrington,
Jay Jostin
as Mr. District Attorney, and Vicki Vola as Miss Miller.
Right.
Yes. I did a pretty good imitation of Jay Jostin. And the announcer was Fred Utell.
Let's hear your Jay Jostin imitation.
Well, I should tell your audience that it's very early in the morning here at the Ambassador East, and I'm not in voice yet. Once Shalyapin was asked to sing in the morning, as you know. He said, sing in the morning. Can't even spit. I remember the announcer saying, Mr. District Attorney, champion of the people, defender of truth, guardian of our fundamental rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the music would come in, Peter Van Steeden's orchestra. And then on an echo chamber, Jay Jostin would say, and it shall be my duty to defend... No. And it shall be my duty to prosecute to the limit of the law all persons accused of crimes perpetrated in my district. And to defend with equal vigor the rights and privileges of all its citizens.
Terrific, terrific. Can you remember the sponsor of that program?
Sure. Ipana for the smile of health and Sal Hepatica for the smile of beauty.
Great.
Vice versa.
Yeah. Right. They used to come in.
Yes, yes. And if you were on the show often enough, you'd get cases of this stuff sent to your home.
No spelling.
And that was produced by a wonderful man named Ed Byron. He was really a good radio director. That show was fun to work.
What did you think of the scripts on Mr. D.A.?
Well, they were melodrama, and they were good.
Mm-hmm.
They were only cops and robbers melodrama, but for that, they were good. But the soap operas pretended to delve into the human heart and all that crap, and that's all it was.
What about I Love a Mystery now? What's your opinion of the writing on I Love a Mystery?
Well, those were mystery yarns.
Mm-hmm.
They were only supposed to be cliffhangers, and they were very good for what they were, adventure stories. I remember Temple of the Vampires, that had mm-hmm. a marvelous premise. And I remember one episode that people still talk to me about. I thought that Carlton Morris really used extraordinary imagination in that to build suspense. We were in a great temple, like Angkor Vat, in the middle of the night. And it was pitch black, and we were swinging by great ropes back and forth, pendulum style, and afraid of bumping into each other in the dark. And that's a good situation.
He was very, very precise about sound effects.
Yes,
too, wasn't he?
Yes, yeah.
I understand that he had great descriptions in the copy, right, in the script.
He was a master of sound effects, and my own mind is visually so orally so strong that I could imagine I just heard a phone ring.
Fantastic.
Incredible sound effect, yes.
It's really good. What other evening programs did you do? The network.
FBI in Peace and War. LAVA. Lava yeah, Soap sponsored
yeah,
that one.
Right.
So many I can't possibly
remember.
Did you
usually play a heavy or...
Anything. Didn't matter. You played anything. And you generally played two roles.
Right.
You would double. And your ability to double in radio... had a lot to do with your ability to get jobs. And this was abused. It eventually got to the point where only those who could double got jobs, and the directors were saving money. The mm-hmm. producer was saving money by having it, instead of hiring two actors, they'd have one. And eventually they would have only, say, three actors in the whole studio playing 20 roles.
And then put a lot of people out of work.
Yes, and the quality was bad because very few people can double really well. Louis Van Ruten was a great doubler. Everett Sloan, who was one of the great radio actors, Gary Merrill, guys like that, Richard Widmark, they weren't good doublers. They always sounded exactly like themselves. I was a pretty fair doubler. So eventually AFRA, now is AFTRA, the AFRA, American Federation of Radio Artists, made a ruling that there could be no more than two actors doubling on any given show, and they could only play two roles instead of three actors playing five roles, each making a cast of 15. And the quality of the shows immediately went up, although they were really doing it to protect, to give jobs to more actors. But there was an actor around, Phil Kramer, he's still around, and he's famous for having a voice like this. And he talks like this, and he still sounds exactly like this, and he only be cast for roles like that. So a director said to him, "Can you double?" He said, "Double? Of course I can double." He said, "I can talk way up here or way down here." I asked him once if that story was true. He said, no, that's a story they tell about me. I said, I can talk way up here or way down here.
We struck a memory wave here this morning.
Yes, yes, lovely Phil Kramer. Nice man.
Did you ever do any voices like that that caught on anywhere that radio people would remember?
No, except my voice for Reggie, which I've forgotten. At that time, Charlie McCarthy was still on the air, and Ray Noble was the orchestra leader. Yeah. The Englishman wrote "Goodnight, Sweetheart," and I sort of imitated Ray Noble, who had a slight cockney in his voice. But the writing wasn't good British dialect. It was full of words that Carlton Morse thought were British, like righto, and I say, everything was, every line began with, "I say, Doc, suppose we climb up this old water tower and then have a look, see." As I think back, it was kind of ridiculous dialogue. Well, radio is full of lines describing what you were doing.
Right.
Here, let me open this door for you. I'll turn on the light with this switch on the wall right here. Click. You know, so the audience would know what you were doing.
Well, you know, the Lone Ranger often talked to Silver. You know, he says, "Hi-ho, Silver, away! Yes. We're going to head off the Cavendish gang at the ranch, and then we're going to meet Tonto at the cave." And he'd be a whole
string
of... He would
recapitulate the story, yes.
Right,
yes.
And they often did that, I think.
Of course, the true heyday of soap opera and radio and kids' shows, which was another classification. I never really got into kids' shows. Lone Ranger was a kids' show. Mm-hmm. I Love a Mystery was sort of a kids' show. But the heyday of that took place in Chicago. And all those Chicago actors were a different group. When it moved to New York, they moved. Many of them moved to New York, too. But there was one show that was good. Of all of radio, millions of radio shows on the set, except for Fred Allen and Jack Benny. Do you like that? There was one show that was genuinely good, good writing and good acting, and only one. And that was Vic and Slade.
Vic and Slade, yeah.
Vic and Slade was genuinely good, and those scripts I would put up against the best American humor of James Thurber or Ring Lardner. And the acting was extraordinary. And one of the actors is a pretty good friend of mine. He's at Paramount producing a show now. And I see him every day because we're doing The Odd Couple and he's writing, producing Love American Style. And that's Billy Idelson, who was Rush
on
Vic and Slade.
And he's out in Hollywood today producing, directing?
I just said that.
Very good.
Yes. And that's your memory bank.
Well, what about Easy Aces? Remember that program?
Easy Aces was very, very good indeed, very funny. It capitalized on the performances of Goodman Ace and his wife Jane Ace. It was clever, very clever.
Now, another clever show out of radio's golden age, if you will, was the Henry Morgan show.
Yeah.
And you
I was on that.
To do
yeah.
with that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what did you have to do with it?
Well, the original show, Here's Morgan, was something else again. Henry Morgan just talked for 15 minutes every day. He was the first to kid sponsors and be irreverent about anything. That was a big deal then.
Mm-hmm.
He then moved into the big time with a big nighttime half-hour comedy show. And that was my first job getting out of the Army. I auditioned for Henry Morgan, and he used me, and I'm eternally grateful to him. It broke the drought. I had quite a stretch when I got out of the Army before I found a job.
Did you do a number of different roles on that show? Or
comedy parts, yeah.
You played against Henry on the...
Oh, and comedy sketches, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. What was your last, not counting what you're doing today in radio, which we'll get to, but what was your last radio job? You remember?
I have no idea.
Just kind of...
It petered out.
Yeah.
As television came in, radio petered out. And the first year or so of Mr. Peepers, I would get conflicts from the director to be able to make, oh, I love him. I love him, Mr. Peepers, but My True Story in the mornings and things like that. And then those things died. And they just were no more. And if they were, they'd lost their sponsors. And so the pay was very small. And it wasn't worthwhile to do them.
Today you are still a regular on the Opera Quiz program.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So
I'm a regular on a radio show.
That's
true, yes, I hadn't thought of it that way, but it's true. Because we do that live and in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of think of it as an appearance.
But you are regularly on the program?
I'm an irregular regular. I do it three, four, five times a season.
So from The Odd Couple to Mr. Peepers to One Man's Family, I Love a Mystery, My True Story.
The Opera Quiz.
Opera Quiz.
Yes.
And
yes.
You've come full cycle on the radio routine. What about you did a couple of record albums, and on the jackets, I think, they're Vodeo Do or something
mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that you are spoofing the songs of the 20s and the 30s, but I don't think you're spoofing them. I think you're recreating them pretty well.
I think that's true. Yes, yes. I like them. I like them, and I like the sound of old records. And we had a lot of fun. Those are good. I'm rather pleased with those albums.
Things like Boo Hoo and Cecilia.
Well, now Boo Hoo, I'm just imitating Carmen Lombardo, my notorious imitation. But Cecilia is really a recreation of the period and style. That's good. That's good. If you're going to play any of them on your show, play Cecilia, which is...
I will.
Yes.
Winchester Cathedral was another...
Well, Winchester Cathedral was written in the period, in the manner of that period.
And Stumbling, too.
Stumbling is a good song.
Yeah.
Very good song.
And you do a good job on it, too.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for chatting with us this morning. And,
it's a pleasure, Chuck.
We will be watching for The Odd Couple every Thursday night, beginning September 24th on Channel 7 in Chicago. And we won't forget to remember Tony Randall as Reggie York, and I Love a Mystery, too.
It's better forgotten, but thanks anyway.
Thank you, Tony Randall.